Support for the Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the Morning Show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD HD. I'm Gregory Berg. This music is by Richard Adensel, and it is called The Warsaw Concerto, and it comes from a 1941 film called Dangerous Moonlight. And this is one of a number of different works that are going to be performed this Friday night on a very special piano recital by Carthage Assistant Professor of Music Jane Livingston. As it so happens, Jane will be retiring at least as a full-time professor at Carthage at the end of this school year. So this faculty recital of hers is a special occasion indeed. And not just because of her impending retirement, but because she's put together a really exciting program that I'm excited to be a part of, in which she's going to be playing a number of different works that are essentially out of the world of movies, particularly movies from the 1940s. I think we sneak into the 1950s a little bit, but an example of different wonderful works that primarily were written as miniature piano concertos that for one reason or another figure prominently in these various great films. And Jane even has planned a means by which the audience can not only hear this music but also watch some clips from some of these films. So it's a huge undertaking. She's been working incredibly hard, and it's going to be an exciting night of music and movies this Friday night, 7:30 at Siebert Chapel. And I thought it would be a fun occasion to talk with Jane Livingston about all of this. She and I became officially full-time faculty the same year at Carthage back in the mid 1990s, and we just celebrated our 20th anniversary. And Jane, it looks like you're going out with a bang. First of all, we welcome you to the Morning Show.
Well, thank you, Greg, and thank you for having me. I was just saying this is a really exciting event. This has been on my bucket list for a long time.
Glad you get to put it together. And I know that you've been hastening to add that, I mean, you don't want necessarily this called a full-blown retirement, in that you don't intend to ride off into the sunset. You're going to be remaining very, very active. But in terms of your full-time professorship at Carthage, that ends as of the end of the school year. Talk for a moment, first of all, about your own life as a pianist. Did you begin from just the tiniest little age, or did piano come a little later in your childhood? When did all this begin?
No, I was the average age of a child in the 50s. I was 7 when it all started, and it started with a German professor who had moved to our hometown. And when my mother was very young, they could only afford piano lessons for one child, and they gave it to her younger sister. But my mother would stand in the doorway and with this same professor, and she would learn everything she could that way. And she was determined when I was born that I would have lessons from this very talented teacher. So she had tremendous ears and could pick up almost anything and play it. She's the one who had all the talent, but but she didn't get the lessons, but I'm the one who did.
Wow. And was it sort of love at first sight? I mean, from the first moment you began playing and taking lessons, was this a love affair that was destined for great things?
I don't know. I can't say that it necessarily was, but it became my escape, and I would always head to the piano. They never said to me, you need to practice now and set the alarm clock in any way, but I liked to play the music I liked to play, and the professor turned out to be a really charming gentleman, and yes, I was taught all the classics and all, but he knew I had this funny little bent in me, and he used to call me his faker.
Ah.
I used to like to take things from the radio and sit down and try to play them, and he used to call me Janice, my little faker, but he also called me his little star, too, and which was kind of strange. I didn't realize that I had any talent.
Wow. Well, cool. And, of course, not only have you played piano all these years and played very well, but of course also become a really fine teacher. Fairly early on, did it become clear to you that that was going to be part of your future as well, to go into piano pedagogy?
That's another thing. No, I was born into a family of teachers in a way, and my great aunt, Alverna Burdick, had been the dean of women at Connecticut College. And whenever she came to town, I would sit at her feet and listen to all of her stories. And I had so many other people in the family who were teachers. But my first experience teaching was with dogs. And the man who ran the dog obedience school told my parents I had a future with dogs. And then from there, I started training horses. And early on, when I was in college, I started working on teaching some piano on the side. I love teaching. And I didn't realize how much I loved teaching until probably about 10 years after I'd gotten into it. But I really loved it. And my student teaching, I was certified in physical sciences. And my student teaching experience, which was in Vermont, was teaching ninth grade. And I taught earth science and intro to science, per se. So, yeah, I had teaching in my background from very early on.
Well, and you've just touched on something that I wanted to be sure to ask you, which is namely that in addition to having all these music degrees, you also have a geology degree and have even done some teaching and some leading of trips at Carthage, wearing your hat as a geologist. Where in the world did that interest come from?
Oh, that was there early on. I graduated from high school with honors in science. I don't know where it came from, but I really loved reading about geology and reading about volcanoes. And I made my rock collection in eighth grade like the rest of us, but I really got into it. So that's where it stemmed from, I guess.
So I know you've taken Carthage students on at least one geology exhibition and maybe more. Where has your interest in geology taken you geographically?
Well, my mapping when I was in college was in Britain. It was the northernmost coast of Scotland, and the other area was Holyhead Island in Wales, and I was determined to get back there. So I've taken students to Scotland and Australia, Iceland, and Hawaii, and I had a lot of help doing this. There were a lot of students in the music department who kind of pushed me in this direction, and I never would have done it without their promotion to get me going again.
Excellent. So. Well, it's fun to see all the interesting things that you are doing. And, of course, now among many other things, you're a grandmother. So I imagine that's one of the things that sort of hastens this decision for you to simplify your life professionally at least a little bit. So there's a little more time to be grandma.
Yes, they're 4, 2, and 1. And my daughters, my family is very important to me. And I really want to be there for all of them. It's time.
Yeah, terrific. Well, it's time to talk about Friday night's recital, 7:30 at Siebert Chapel. I'm trying to remember, what's the name of the recital?
Under the Stars.
Under the Stars, that's right.
Kind of reminiscent of the Hollywood Bowl, where several of these were actually premiered as individual concert pieces. Mm-hmm. So, namely, Warsaw Concerto and Spellbound were played at the Hollywood Bowl.
Right. Now, it's so interesting. I think if somebody's not kind of a connoisseur of classic movies from this era, they might really be surprised to hear, wait a minute, a piano concerto in a movie? I mean, unless it's a movie about a pianist, and maybe some of these are, but can you kind of talk about this phenomenon that where we see these kind of substantial, classically flavored works in the middle of a film score?
That was the trend at that time. Music was becoming, I think, in movies, to have a more substantial part, and three of these are integral to the plot of the movies. Two are, well, the Gershwin, for instance, was really a vehicle for Gershwin music. So his songs and then the ballet in American in Paris. And, of course, using the Debussy for the Portrait of Jenny was just fulfilling the dream of the producers and the director, that they have this kind of ethereal music going behind the plot. But the other three, Cornish Rhapsody and the Warsaw Concerto, and, well, those two in particular involve musicians and the impact of the war on the musicians. And this was a real concern during the 40s. So many had been lost in the conflicts, and one way or another, whether it was in concentration camp at that time in 41, they weren't too clear about what was happening at that with that respect. But the artists themselves who had gone to fight, many of them died. Mm. And I don't think we realize how many, especially from Europe.
Right.
And Britain. It was just a tremendous loss to the musical community.
Right. We haven't yet even begun to really count the cost. We maybe can't even count the cost. Absolutely.
Right.
Talk a moment about the extensive expedition you had to go on to lay your hands on all of this music for all of the different pieces that we're going to be playing Friday night. I mean, that was no small matter, at least in a couple of instances.
And I want to thank Greg, too, for his ability to improvise, because some of these had to be improvised. The British film studios during this time actually ripped up a lot of the scores following the production of the movie, because I didn't think they would be of any use any longer. And so it was very difficult getting my hands on the Cornish Rhapsody. All I could get was a solo. And the same thing with the Spellbound Concerto. Although Leonard Panario had really, who was a famous pianist and who devoted his life to playing piano at four movies, a lot of his stuff was done as sketches, and he would simply improvise during the orchestra recordings, which is amazing in itself, and walk away. For one particular one, it was Midnight on the Cliffs. The beautiful music, all I could get was a lead line with chords that were handwritten by Leonard Panario.
Wow.
No orchestration, no anything. We're not doing that one for that reason.
That's a little too much improvising.
Yeah, it was too much improvising. It was one page. That's all that was available. So the Debussy and the Gershwin were available, but Spellbound and the Cornish Rhapsody, we've had to kind of work things out. The Adenzel Warsaw Concerto has had a life of its own and was scored for two pianos by Percy Grainger, and we're using that edition, as well as the American in Paris was scored for two pianos for the Lebec sisters. And Percy Grainger is the arranger there, or was the arranger there. And that's a difficult score to read off of, because that's all handwritten, as we know, right? So, yes, it was the thing that, you know, the score itself wasn't that important. The movie was important, but not the score. So toss it.
Right. I mean, so once upon a time, it's like the value of this, the lasting value, was just not fully appreciated.
Not fully appreciated at all.
Well, before we talk about the other aspect of Friday night, which is that people are actually going to get to watch portions of some of these films, let's listen to something else, and I'm going to give you the choice. Let's give a little sample of something else that's on Friday night's concert. What would you like?
Oh, I think Spellbound.
Spellbound. Okay. Yes. So say a word to our listeners, first of all, about this film, and then about this music.
Well, this was an early Hitchcock film starring Gregory Peck and Ingrid Bergman. And he had wanted to get Bernard Herrmann, who wrote for his movies, but he was unavailable. He was working on another project. So Miklos Rosa was hired. And Hitchcock was not happy, because he felt that the music was getting in the way of his direction, because it was so beautiful and, in a way, so you couldn't stop listening to it, you know, to listen to such personages as Ingrid Bergman and Gregory Peck. So Hitch was a little unhappy with it, but it has survived, and it's a beautiful piece.
Hmm. So, well, let's listen to a little bit of this music, and we're going to hear some of the real straight-ahead stuff from it. And
there was also a new type of electronic instrument in there called the theremin. It was the first time it was used in a recording. And you'll hear this kind of ooh, kind of spooky sound.
Let's hear a little bit of that. This is from Spellbound. And of course, it has been no small matter for you to manage the feat of playing not only the piano, but sharing with the audience the sound of the theremin.
I'm trying with my keyboard, and I'm trying to match the sound as best I can. I don't necessarily have a theremin patch on there, but I've created something that should work. I'd like to say one thing about these films. I'm also drawn to them because several of them have male leads that were severely affected by the war and either injured or suffering from some kind of psychosis or PTSD following the war. Spellbound character is one of them. The war was, in my household growing up, it was still very much a part of our life. We'd hear about it frequently. Both my parents served in World War II. Friends that they made in the service would come by the house. So, and then I'd watch some of these black and white films because TV didn't have a lot of kids' shows in those days. And there was a station out of, I think it was Newark, New Jersey, called Metro Media TV. And they'd take one of these films and loop it all day long. So we would watch it while we were playing with our toys, you know. And that's how I fell in love with some of these movies. But the drain on the human being facing the things that they saw during wartime and carrying that around with them must have been a tremendous burden. But they were quiet for the most part about it.
Wow. So that's an important theme, in a sense, that runs beneath the surface of this recital. And so you're going to be showing to the audience excerpts from all of the films in question.
Yes, I am. And without the help of Michael Murphy from Media Services at Carthage, putting this together, I couldn't have done it. We're going to show a few moments. It's been hard to edit out, you know, and get kind of the essence of the movie within about 10 to 15 minutes, and then we're going to play. So we're also going to have some snacks available so people can buy some snacks to get through this movie night. I'm really excited about it.
So. I think it's cool. Now, of course, one thing that might mystify people is that when we come to a piece like Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun, that, of course, was not written with any sense whatsoever that it would ever be used in a film. So that's something where somebody came along and used it for a film.
Yes.
What film are we talking about in that case?
That's Portrait of Jenny. And the film itself is quite interesting because it starts with the scene with the opening credits, and it goes to a canvas scene of Central Park, and it's in black and white. And it's a canvas as though it's a painting. And the whole movie itself is impressionistic. There's a lot of light shadows, and then the cinematographer messes with going to a sepia color, and then he goes to a green color during the terrible storm, and the only bit of color is at the very end when you finally see her portrait. It's a very evocative, ethereal, and timeless movie. The poem that inspired Debussy is anything but that. It's a very erotic poem about a faun, you know, dreaming about, you know, these beautiful water nymphs all day long. So it's a far thing from the Portrait of Jenny.
Right. Well, here's just a little bit of that exquisite music of Debussy that we'll be playing in this arrangement for two pianos. Thank you. I hate to break into such exquisite music of Claude Debussy, Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. And this is, of course, a piece that was conceived for orchestra, but then arranged, I believe, by Debussy himself for two pianos. And, of course, there is a special challenge and wonder and magic involved in anything which is scored for two pianos. Not too long ago on this program, I had the pleasure of having Jim and Susan McKeever on the program. They just celebrated a big anniversary of playing together with a wonderful recital at Parkside. And it was fun to talk with them about all the time that they have devoted over the years to really perfecting their craft as dual pianists. What kind of pleasure does it give you to engage in this particular kind of performance versus the other kind of performing that you've done plenty of, in which it's just you at a single piano, maybe with an orchestra or completely on your own? What are kind of the special challenges and pleasures of playing in this particular format?
Well, two piano is a little more difficult than duet playing. When you're sitting right next to someone on a bench, you can say things very quietly, but when there's a space between you, you can't. It's the communication between the two pianos that makes it a little challenging. But I love it because it has to be seamless in the communication between the two of you, and you have the full palette of both instruments at your command.
Hmm.
And I think that is such a special way of exploring piano music and the ensemble, and it's so satisfying to me. I've always loved two piano music, so, and I play a lot of it too, but communication is tough. And I've nested pianos. Remember, Greg, you and I nested pianos before, where you're at the opposite end of the two pianos and I'm on the other side, and all we have are our heads to communicate. We're going to be side by side on Friday night, so we can see each other's hands much better. And that seems to be the trend now, to do that.
Hmm. We're going to finish with something that is actually a memento of the very first time that you and I played together as dual pianists, way back in the late 1990s when Carthage, in a very big way, celebrated the 100th, what would have been the 100th birthday of George Gershwin. And you and I played his wonderful An American in Paris, which is, quite a challenge, but such a pleasure to play. And of course, you'll show a little bit of that film as well, and to help people kind of get into the mood.
And this one is also arranged by Percy Grainger, the man who I think had 20 fingers. And it's handwritten, so it's a challenge, but it's a lot of fun.
Cool. So here's the last few measures of Gershwin's An American in Paris in this Percy Grainger arrangement for two pianos, played here by Katy and Marielle Lebec. An American in Paris, that's just one of the pieces that's going to be played Friday night in this recital at Siebert Chapel, 7:30. A reminder that it will involve not only all of these wonderful works, five in all, but also excerpts from each of the films in which this music was either composed or utilized. And Jane Livingston, I'm glad that this exciting project was on your bucket list, and it's going to come into completion. That has to feel really, really good.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And I couldn't have done this without your help, Greg.
good to be aboard for something so fun. So again, Friday night, free of charge, 7:30 at Siebert Chapel, Jane Livingston in recital, Under the Stars, so to speak. Part two of the morning show with Nick Berutian and the Bell Ensemble coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. For part two of today's morning show, I'm pleased to welcome back into the studios Nick Berutian, a former student of mine, a graduate of Carthage College, and back in the area, and the director and creator, I should say, also of a lovely ensemble called the Bell Ensemble, based in Racine, which has presented several really exciting and wonderful concerts, and their next one is coming up this Saturday night, 7:30, at Holy Communion Lutheran Church. It's a program called Northern Lights, vocal music of Scandinavia, the Baltic, and the Northern Midwest. Sibelius, Grieg, Pärt, Eisenfalz, Barnett, and others. And it promises to be an absolutely lovely, lovely program with some very, very talented musicians from the area who will be performing with Fumi Nakayama at the piano. And first of all, Nick Berutian, we welcome you back to the morning show.
It's great to be here, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. You are Armenian by descent. Are you full Armenian, or is there some Scandinavian mixed into your heritage?
I'm quite a bit Danish and Swedish.
Ah.
My maternal grandfather is of Danish descent, and my maternal grandmother is of Swedish descent. So a Dane and a Swede got together and didn't kill each other.
Yeah, all right.
That's a big part of why I'm here.
That's good. Well, that's a big part of who you are, evidently. And so this program called Northern Lights speaks to you, I suppose, on a very, very sort of personal level. Tell us a little bit about the journey you sort of went on in putting this program together.
I'm really excited about this program. In some ways, it's our most expansive program. We put on, in December, our Christmas concert was focused on Danish Baroque music of a pretty particular period of about 60 years. And last fall, we had a concert of all Armenian music, almost totally from the turn of the century the beginning of the 20th century, around those decades. And before that, we had a recital of German operatic literature. And so this. In this concert, I'm taking advantage of the theme of Northern Lights to not only explore some really fantastic composers from the Baltic and from Norway who are now living and still very, very active, as well as some of the classics that you just listed off, Sibelius and Grieg. Mm. And especially those latter two, Sibelius and Grieg, are just such powerhouse composers. The repertoire is so vast, it allowed us to choose songs that also fit with the image of Northern Lights, of those dancing lights in the winter northern sky, as well as other celestial bodies, if you will, stars and moons, and the heavens.
It looks like a beautifully constructed program, and it excites me a lot. I'm intrigued here by the presence of a solo song by Grieg called Ansvana, a swan, which I sang way back in high school and then sang again not too long ago when Amy Haynes and I did an all Grieg faculty recital at Carthage. So there are some solo songs sprinkled in with works that we think of more as choral pieces.
Yes. In fact, two of the pieces, there's a variety on this program, and that's another way this program stretches beyond what we've done earlier this year. We've always included a little bit of soloistic repertoire in combination with ensemble pieces, but on this concert we have an octet of singers who perform about somewhere, I don't know, a third to a half of the concert is the full ensemble. There's a number of pieces for men's quartet, two hymns or two songs for male chorus that we'll perform as a male quartet by Grieg, and one hymn by Jean Sibelius for men's quartet. We have a couple of pieces that are for a mixed quartet, and then we have eight or nine songs that are sung by soloists, all of them sung by some of our fine female soloists, our two sopranos, Nancy Ann Davis and Amy Bowdersey, and one of our mezzo-sopranos, Karen Archbold, will provide those solos.
It must be really fun to, although intimidating too, to decide I want to do a program about great Scandinavian vocal music and then have to choose between what's really actually quite a vast universe and a universe which also includes a fair amount of relatively obscure music in terms of not necessarily easily accessible or not all that well known. I mean, probably some of these pieces you didn't know yourself until you went exploring.
I had to do quite a bit of hunting for this concert. One of the things, and you're right, one of the problems is that there's just so much. I mean, Jean Sibelius is himself a compendium of music. And one of the saving graces was that with a small ensemble like this, again, an octet of singers, there's some choral music that's accessible to us, but a lot of that is immediately eliminated by the small resources that we're using. Hmm. Many pieces that would be perfectly lovely on a choral concert, we simply had to leave for a choir to sing. And so we've chosen a couple of songs that are written for choir, but are somewhat more accessible to small forces like this.
Hmm. In the pieces you shared with me, the one that really I found especially compelling, and partly because it's sung, at least on the recording you provided me with very intimate forces, is one of the pieces by Arvo Pärt, Most Holy Mother of God. It just sounded so intimate and spare and absolutely arresting. Before we hear just a little bit of that, why don't you say a word about it?
This is one of the mixed quartets on the program. It's intended particularly for alto, countertenor, and two tenors, which is an interesting. You don't see that arrangement very often.
Ever.
I've never seen it before. It was written and dedicated to the Hilliard ensemble, and so that's I think Arvo Pärt had very specific voices in mind when he was crafting this. In parentheses, of course, the countertenor can be replaced by an alto, and so that's what we're doing on this concert.
Well, here's a little bit of this piece by Arvo Pärt called Most Holy Mother of God. One of the things I love about this piece is also what I'm sure makes it so difficult. I mean, it's utter simplicity, and this spare texture also means that, in a sense, it really calls for a certain kind of perfection, because there's not a lot to hide behind. You won't have the amazing Fumi Nakayama at the piano with a blazing accompaniment, which could obscure any number of errors. I mean, we will hear everything, including every imperfection. It has to be really daunting to do a piece like this, and also knowing that the audience might not even realize, to a full extent at least, just how difficult a piece like this is to perform correctly and appropriately.
It's really fun to work with those nuances, though, and the particularities of every voice. As I was recruiting singers for this concert, I talked with some who were very interested and, you know, maybe couldn't make one of the planned rehearsals, and suggested to me that they could learn the music adequately in the amount of time that they had still. And my response was, I think you're a great, I have no doubts that you can learn this music on your own. That's not the issue. The issue is matching your own voice with the other particular voice that's going to be there. And that takes time and rehearsal and some diligence of its own. We're really lucky to be performing at Holy Communion Lutheran Church with, as I'm thinking about some of these sparse sonorities that come through that piece and others, the space really, really loves that sort of material. And
yeah, it'll be that'll be a beautiful setting for a lot of these things. One of the pieces you're doing that I did not know at all is something by Jan Sibelius called Hymn, and as I went searching for it, I kept coming up with Finlandia, which is this very, very famous piece by Sibelius, probably his most famous piece, but I just had a feeling that's not what Nick has in mind. And of course I eventually looked a little more carefully and did come across then the piece that in fact you have selected, that's particularly beautiful. Do you want to say a word about Mr. Sibelius and or this lovely piece?
This is one of those hymns that I feel, or one of those songs that I feel really kind of stupidly lucky to have discovered. As I mentioned before, Sibelius's output is so enormous. There was just, it was easy to get lost searching for pieces that we might do. He has tons of music for women's chorus, not quite as much music for men's chorus, but a lot of it, while we could pull it off with an octet, would really not be appropriate for us. And then all of a sudden I stumbled across this song, Hymn, and it sounds so lovely and is so simple in its use of the voices that I thought this is going to be perfect for us. And it's a little peculiar for Sibelius. It's almost a piece of sacred music. I'm not quite sure if you'd categorize it that way. He didn't write much at all sacred music, and yet this is entitled Him, and it's about the death of a good man.
Hmm. Here it is, some music of Finland's greatest composer, Jan Sibelius. Music of Sibelius, and I just realized, Nick, we have not yet talked about the matter of pronunciation of these Scandinavian texts. So upon whose expertise have you drawn in order to handle that challenging aspect?
One of our soloists and members of the ensemble at this program is Amy Boudersee, a professor at of voice and professor of voice at Parkside, and she has some specialty in Norwegian song and some heritage there. I don't want to say wrongly. I don't know exactly what her background is, but so she has she is helpful to the ensemble in that way. I did look to the Sons of Norway, and the chair of that group was able to direct me to a couple of people that are native Norwegian speakers to help us work through the Grieg songs. Mm. Nancy Davis has done us the good service of taking on two of the Swedish songs by Sibelius, and she has a coach who I don't know, but is of he's Swedish himself, helping her with that. So we've depended on the good nature of native speakers for the most part.
So the text will be in good hands. Very good. We'll finish out by hearing just a little bit of what is the namesake piece of this concert, a piece of music called Northern Lights. It's one of the few on the program that I already know. My sister-in-law's choir at Tremper High School sang this, and of course, the whole world seems to have fallen in love with this particular piece and this composer. Say a quick word about it.
Ole Jalo is one of the hottest young new composers in the U.S. and increasingly internationally. He's from Norway, and since 2001, when he began studies at the Juilliard School, has lived in New York. And this, as you said, is one of his most well-known pieces. It's interesting in that the subject Northern Lights, the subject is Northern Lights, about which he writes, but he uses the text of love from the Song of Solomon.
Hmm. Interesting. It's a gorgeous piece, and I know it will be one of just many treasurable pieces of music on Saturday night's concert. Again, this is Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. at Holy Communion Lutheran Church. I know, Nick, you were delighted with the big audience, appreciative audience that appeared for your last concert, and we hope many people will take the opportunity to hear the Bell Ensemble Saturday evening, 7:30 p.m. Concert called Northern Lights with treasurable vocal music from Scandinavia. Nick Berutian, thank you so much. Congrats on all the great work that you're doing with your new ensemble.
Thank you, Greg.
It's a minute before 9 o'clock here on WGTD. Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support for the morning show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. A cloudy day today with patchy morning fog, a 40% chance of some light afternoon snow, with a high today of 33 degrees. This is WGTD HD Kenosha.